Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is Barbara Mink. Mink is well known in our region for her many ventures in culture, journalism, and politics. For over 25 years, she has taught at the Johnson Graduate School of Management at Cornell University. She founded the Light and Winter Music, Art, and Science Festival in 2004 and was a member and finally chair of the Tompkins County Legislature for 12 years. In 1998, she began another career as a serious painter, which is what we're going to discuss today. Mink's work has been shown in numerous galleries and art spaces, including Blink Gallery and the State of the Art Gallery in Ithaca, New York, for which she is also a member. And welcome to the show, Barbara.
Thank you, Tish.
Now, you didn't start painting seriously until 1998, and I read that you said you had this weird feeling that came over you, and you felt like you had to paint.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Well, it was really uncanny. My father painted, and I must have liked it as a child, but I pretty much ceded that territory early and never did. I did acting and voice work, and then I started making clothes, and I used to make one dress for every county board meeting, painting glassware, so little things like that. But one morning in January, remember, it was in between semesters at Cornell, I woke up with this undeniable urge to paint. So I took my daughter's watercolors and ruined a couple pads of paper, didn't know what I was doing. I went to New York, where a dear friend of mine, Gunilla Feigenbaum, who's a very fine painter, sat me down and took me through a red pepper and a rose, how to copy it exactly. And then I took a botanical illustration course from Benta King, who was teaching that every year at Cornell. And that's how I started. But it was just literally out of the blue.
Was that like a physical feeling or an emotional need? Or, you know, I sometimes have this feeling I have to pick up a pen.
Right. No, I didn't feel it in my fingers. It was mainly emotional, I think.
Oh, God, that's so great that you were able to follow that.
Yes.
Now, as you said, you started doing botanical and watercolor flowers. Mm-hmm. And did you remember what your first attempt was as a serious, you know, a serious piece that you wanted to show people?
Well, I wanted to show kind of early because it came fairly easily. And what was fun in the botanical illustration course, which is the first time I'd ever seriously drawn and painted, is that, as you know, botanical illustration is usually very small and almost life-sized of buds and flowers, but mine were always outsized and would flow off the paper, which was very large paper. So it was more of a Georgia O'Keeffe style, but pretty realistic. And then I started doing a lot of bouquets of flowers. I would go to the farmer's market. I would, under cover of night, sometimes take flowers from the neighbors and also support our local florists. And so I did a lot of that and started showing early.
You just talked about the fact that you had people teaching you and helping you, other artists. What else does that mean? Can you elaborate on what that means to help teach someone? Do they critique you? Do they show you techniques?
First thing, I think, is technique. If you have an innate ability to render, for example, then techniques in rendering or drawing representationally will be very useful in saving you time. Instead of having to figure out the equation for how to do three-point perspective, if you know what it is, then you can get to the tiled floor much more quickly. Bill Benson, a local painter, was also a very important mentor for me. He makes a living as a portrait painter, but feeds his soul with kind of a mixture of representational landscape and abstract. And I studied both figure drawing and oil painting technique with Bill when I moved from watercolor to oils. So to me, anyway, it's much more technique, the ability to save time and to move faster, and also to get a reality check on what you're doing. Sometimes when you're in the middle of painting something, it looks so great. And then usually it takes a couple days or a week to step back and say, what was I thinking? If you have a good teacher there, he or she can see it right away.
And of course, a really good painter needs to step from technique into creativity. And do you feel like that you did that really fast? Or are you still trying to learn that? How do you feel about the creative part, aside from just the technique?
Well, I guess it depends on how you're defining creativity. Creating something from nothing.
Something that would go into a gallery, something that would be valuable in the art market, something that people want on their walls.
Okay, those are three different things. There's a Venn diagram connection among all of them, but they are different. I think I'm most comfortable, I know I'm most comfortable, painting things that both fulfill a desire in me to try new things, and we can talk about what that is later, but also that people enjoy living with. The mention of a gallery is something else. A gallery can either be a place to hang things so people can see it and want to take it home, or if you're talking about New York City, which is, in a sense, sui generis, then it's an investment, it's a discovery, it's a whole different world.
You're also talking about politics, too, right?
Yeah. So that's not in my world view at this point. Uh-huh. But I do love doing, for example, the Art Trail, which is coming up in October, where people come from a pretty big radius to go into almost 50 studios around town. And with no pressure to buy, are able to, in an informal way, really explore and ask questions and look at all kinds of different things. And that's a very gratifying experience.
Yeah. So art is also a social medium for people nowadays. You know, we always think of artists in their big studios hidden from people and at the tops of
big
roofs.
It is at the top of roof. My studio is very nice, not huge, but big enough.
Big enough.
At the top of the house. It's solitary. For me, it's solitary. I don't like having anybody around when I'm painting. But once you're done, it's like playwriting. It's like songwriting. If nobody acts, if nobody sings, if nobody looks, then it's hard. You have to have really strong inner resources for that. Uh-huh. And I don't. I like the social aspect. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the fact that you did eventually go from watercolors and still lives into these big canvases and oils and mm-hmm. acrylics. Well, what was the motivation behind going so differently?
Well, I think the motivation actually was the other way around. Because I started so late, relatively, with no pedigree in education of art, I felt the need to prove to myself that I could do just about anything. So I started with still lifes and figure drawing. I did a couple portraits I never really got to, but figure paintings for sure. Fruit, fish, figures, things that began with F. then I went to landscapes and clouds. I love Turner, so I did a lot of clouds and sea. And eventually, the line between the sea and the clouds vanished. And then all of a sudden, it's an abstract painting, which is really where I wanted to be all the time. So once I knew that I could do things, I felt freer to let go of that technical ability and to channel it in other ways. I do, as I said with the flowers, I mean, I do like working large. I love color, not primary color necessarily, but dirty colors mixed.
Uh-huh. Earth colors you use a lot of.
Well, it depends. Uh-huh. Sometimes I've been mixing a lot of girly colors, kind of pinks and oranges and sage greens. I love those. But earth when appropriate. And sometimes there's always a dot of red just uh-huh. to remind you that here we are.
Barbara's putting her blood into this.
Yes.
So you go from representational art,
uh-huh.
like clouds and seascapes, mm-hmm. to something that's more obscure. And mm-hmm. was that a mental process? I mean, are you trying to hide what your intentions were? Mm-hmm. Do you want people to invent their own ideas around your work? What was that?
Very much so, but it's not intentional. In our conversations, as part of our friendship, we've talked a lot about the intention behind doing one thing or another, what are you trying to achieve? And I really don't think in those terms. It's not a pretension. It really is true. It's much more an intuitive feeling about starting, and it's always that starting mark that's the important one, and then seeing where it leads and building on it until the right balance of line and empty space and color and shape is arrived at.
So it really is improv.
It is.
You know, a lot of writers come up with plot, the beginning, middle, and end of stories.
Right.
But you do improv.
I think it's much more prevalent for people who are doing portraits or representational things or trying to capture a piece of the world on canvas because you know what you're looking at, you know what you want it to be. If I ever were a representational painter, I would love to be in the mold of someone like Lucian Freud, whose figures are so immediately recognizable, but so painterly and emotionally laden, it takes it out of the realm of just capturing what you're seeing and putting it on a canvas.
Some of his things look like realistic papier-mâché to me.
It's really interesting
to me. Now, you have said that a lot of your recent work has been influenced by art, I mean by science, mathematics. And did that coincide with Light and Winter, or have you always been interested in that?
No, that was the most overt conjunction of my interests. It was a conscious decision to try to see if I could blend these two passions of mine that heretofore had been completely unrelated. I mean, I organized, directed, produced, ran Light and Winter, which involves a whole nother set of skills. And then there was the painting. But instead of trying to be inspired by the ideas of math and physics, for example, I would paint and then see what it reminded me of based on my knowledge of math and physics, and came up with some sort of resonant framing device in the sense of a framing concept for the piece. What I was doing at the time was very different from what I'm doing now. It was on very large canvases, a lot of paint, a lot of medium, and acrylic, you use a lot of medium to make it flow differently or build up. And I tried to contrast that amorphous flow with the hard-edged feeling of these round balls that I painted,
that
looked three-dimensional. People thought they could pick it out of the canvas. So not only are they fun to do, but it presented that kind of hard-edged versus soft. But because, as humans, we're always looking for patterns, they look like planets, or they look like neutrons.
Or cells,
or whatever. So they lent themselves naturally to this sort of effort. So the naming was the fun part.
Wow, that fascinates me, that people meld all those different disciplines and try to come up with a concrete portrait of it in some ways. You know, your paintings often remind me of archaeology more than just biology or science. I mean, it feels like you're showing us landscapes that could be in the desert, in our bodies, or in space. Now, you tell me that's not intentional, but you understand that, right?
I understand it completely. I'm so happy to hear that. I think I'm drawn to certain things. I am drawn to landscapes. I used to think of myself as a landscape painter, no matter how abstract they were. So you're definitely reading what's going into it. The sense of archaeology, though, is very interesting, because I think where I am now is more architectural than archaeological. Either way, there's a sense of things that are structural, that are buried, covered over, uncovered. I like that in general. I like that as an English major. I like that as a reader.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
I like it as a journalist, as you know. You know, you uncover what people are not saying. I liked it as a politician. What's really going on? So, in a sense, I think it's probably a very basic feeling of mine.
Now, do you sit there and watch your paintings develop, or, you know, as you visit these terrains, as you're painting them? And do you stand back and see where you might be going, or do you get as surprised as the final product is to us?
I don't know, but I do know you have to stand back. You have to stand back, just because, especially since I work on such a big scale, and half of it's on the floor and half of it's on the easel, you have to get a sense of how it works. No, I wouldn't say that there's a sense of surprise at the end. There might be a sense of gratification. Oh, good, that works. Something like that.
And then when you stand back, do you decide when it's finished?
I do, sometimes prematurely. So I have been known to go around the house and paint on the walls if I see something that I forgot. But
if you're just joining us, my guest is Barbara Mink. We're talking about her painting and artwork through the last 15 years. Now, do you begin with a certain color in your head, or
no,
do you just stare at and just grab something arbitrarily?
Yeah.
Really?
Well, arbitrarily. No, I guess I must. I must start with a particular color sometimes, if there's color. Lately, I've been working a lot with line, so it's where the lines go, how they work, and then everything flows from that.
Are you using mathematics in the way that a mathematician would? Are you actually using rulers and trying to make straight lines, or just letting your arm go where it will, even curving?
Yes and yes. I certainly would never say I work like a mathematician because I don't understand math. I don't care how many books I've read. I don't care how clear Light and Winter presenters have made it. I don't get it.
I don't either.
But in my heart of hearts, I think I have a sense. I respond to the golden triangle. I respond to different shapes and formations. So when I lay out, I do a version of chalk lines at this point. I'm using unprimed or raw canvas and linen, which is very different for the last couple of years, different from what I've used before, and not a lot of people use that. It was used a lot in the 60s by the abstract expressionists. So I dip a coarse string, what's it called?
Twine or something?
Twine, exactly. Coarse twine, with nice little hairs on it, in black paint or gesso, and thumbtack it into one side and go on the other side and go boing, and it makes this deliciously dirty line, so with splatting all over the place. It's really fun. And so I can lay down some of those, and along the way I might use a ruler for some straight lines, and I use painterly marks and the hand as well.
So you're actually playing an instrument in some ways.
Well, if I sang along with it and made the sound effects, yes. But yes,
I'm not going to ask you if you do that. Now, you know, so some of the aspects of some of your most recent work in the last 4 or 5 years, to me, I can't tell if you're showing us a telescopic view or a microscopic view. Mm-hmm. I find that really very, very interesting.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people have said
that.
Yeah.
Talk to us about that, though. I mean, I know. Did you ever paint without your glasses? I know that you have a hard time seeing without glasses. Mm-hmm. Do you try to delve into some of those other worlds?
No, not consciously. I could never paint without my glasses. But I will tell you, I had a very interesting experience 2 days ago, walking down the street, and I had what's called an ocular migraine, which I guess I'd had a number of years ago, but I've forgotten. So I didn't know what was going on. And for those of you out there who have ever had it, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. It's where the vision is almost pixelated, and it felt like collage overlaying of jagged pieces of vision. So once I got over the fear that something really bad was happening, when I think about it now, it's very interesting. I would love to reproduce that sensation. And that's probably what it would be like if I worked without my glasses or something. But I don't like being too literal. I remember after September 11th, I was so upset. I tried to paint a painting that evoked all my emotions, and it was reduced to some sort of literal rendition of what happened.
Yeah.
I'm much more interested in the impression of what you see and how it makes you feel. And I think that may be what you're talking about in terms of viewing things on different scales. You know, people bring a lot to viewing art, and I really respect that. That's why I don't like setting out to do a particular thing, and why it doesn't matter, really, what I intended. You know, if somebody brings something else to the table, that's perfectly legitimate. Yeah. I think that's how we receive things in general.
Yeah, you know? I actually have known some painters who don't want to title any of their works. They don't want to put anything in them that could be interpretation.
Yeah, I went through that stage.
Yeah, yeah.
First of all, it gets hard to keep track of the numbers. Second of all, people like to have a title.
Yeah.
And so now I've been going back to the landscape thing, I've been naming a lot of my newer things, which are fairly architectural because they're so full of lines and planes and geometric figures, after places in California I love.
I've noticed that.
Yeah. In fact, we talked about one, the Santa Monica Pier. Years ago, I once did a small oil rendition of the Santa Monica Pier with the Ferris wheel and with everything. But, you know, who cares? I mean, you could take a picture or somebody could do it much better than I. But this, just with the feeling of the shapes and movement, reminded me of that feeling.
Yeah.
I guess that's the level on which I like to operate.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I was going to ask you about, you've had shows called Earthworks and Event Horizons. And are some of these influenced by travel and the places that you've been? Because of these names, I was thinking
I think so. Both by travel and sometimes by music. I remember I went through a very fertile stage of listening to Yo-Yo Ma's Silk Road Journeys.
I remember.
And I was painting all kinds of Moroccan doors and hot yellow sand. And so, yeah, these things do influence. And certainly I was just in Israel a while ago, so the browns and the golds and the greens and the blues of California, it makes an impression, just the way things filter out.
Yeah. Now, you have said that you create the paintings first and then name them. So are you sometimes surprised that you have evoked something from a travel? Like
yes.
Marina Del Rey. You have
yes.
one called Marina Del Rey.
Absolutely.
I was thinking maybe you stand back and go, wow, I didn't realize I was even painting that.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Yeah.
And
you couldn't find the entrance to Marina Del Rey from that painting. But it really does give the impression of the harbor there.
Yeah, well, I think your Santa Monica Pier reminded me of Santa Monica.
Really?
You know, a lot
yeah.
of people know I'm actually
yeah.
from that area. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, it did. It mm-hmm. it reminded me of the space.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that's what a lot of your work does. It gives us all space
mm-hmm.
to be able to see what you're trying to create for
that's
us
nice.
In some ways.
Oh.
Yeah. What do you think of your early work now?
Yeah, I look back at some of the early flowers. Some of the flowers in the first 2 years really stand up well, but some of the early stuff is early. Noble attempts. I've thrown out a lot, but I try not to throw out everything. Not because anybody would ever want it, but because it's a good reminder of where you've come from.
Mm-hmm. I hear people say they miss that. They miss some of your watercolors.
Oh, well,
you know,
they were accessible and pretty. Yeah,
yeah but yeah. I mean, that's why I was wondering what you think of them now, because you've gone so far beyond.
Mm. I could have stayed painting watercolor flowers forever, and a lot of people do, and more power to them. But I just can't. It really feels like every time I have a show at a gallery, which as a member of State of the Art, I have a show every 3 years. And I've had, I guess, three solos there. I don't know. It feels like the end of a chapter. And so I am almost compelled to start not radically reversing direction, but developing something a little different.
Uh-huh. And do you know when you've finished with the phase? Did you know when you've done the last painting from one of these particular?
I don't think it's that clear, but I know looking back 2 years ago, my first attempt at working on raw canvas is a huge painting that's now over the piano that was done on the floor from the bottle, very full of movement, no line, and that led to the more minimalist approach on this raw canvas that developed. So that was really a transition piece between the event horizons and the timelines phase. The current phase, I'm calling, for lack of anything better, looking east, because I was at the Metropolitan Museum of Art a few months ago and spent a lot of time in the Japanese and Chinese halls. And I've always loved landscape, Chinese landscape.
Uh-huh. So we're going to look forward to a new phase here mm-hmm. coming up soon. You know, a lot of writers have told me a line comes to them or a thought comes to them mm-hmm. and they immediately have to run and write it down. Does that happen to you as a painter? Do you feel this urge to, you know, take the color blue and splash mm-hmm. it on the canvas and you have to do it right now before you forget what you were thinking?
No. Wish it did. No, I don't think it does.
Well, so how do you paint then? I mean, how do you start? Do you start yeah. just when you have time or when you have a feeling?
Well, you know, time is not a small thing, and it's not just, it's both time and space. I have time right now, but I don't have the psychic space. And when I'm teaching full time and other things have to be taken care of, it's not like you can run up and put a dab on and then come down and go back a couple days later
uh-huh.
for me.
Yeah, yeah.
So I've been reading a lot. I've been buying a lot of art books of people I admire. And in a kind of a gestational period for when I really can have time, I'm going to be going to New York this month for another visit to the Met, just waiting till I get that psychic space.
Uh-huh. Do you appreciate art reviews? I mean, do you understand what they're doing? Do they matter to you?
I've been fortunate in having both generous and intelligent reviewers
mm-hmm.
in the Ithaca area. That's not always the case. In many cases, if we're not talking about me, but about reading art criticism, I find it very difficult to understand. both conceptually, because it reminds me of my days in comp lit in the 70s, where there's a certain kind of lingo that you have to understand to even appreciate. But also there's a lot of art happening that I don't understand as well. So maybe it's all of a piece, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I think the critic or the reviewer who takes the time to understand where the work that they're looking at is coming from, if it's trying to achieve anything, and then analyzing whether it meets that goal, I think any artist would be crazy not to appreciate something like that.
Yeah. But, you know, I think there's been a tradition, especially among lay people who do just appreciate art that they want to put in their house, mm-hmm. who think a lot of art critics are snobs and pretentious and trying to read major issues into what are really just paintings. You know what I mean? I mean, and somebody said about you that your attempt to transfer pure emotion directly onto the canvas was the intention of one of the paintings that, that this reviewer was looking at. How do you feel about that kind of an interpretation?
I feel about it the way I think I said I feel about people bringing what they bring in general, whether they're a critic or a layperson. If that's what they feel, fine. Maybe I am. You know, maybe I'm just not that self-aware.
So
I don't
like
know.
You don't mind having people put that kind of heavy emotion into what is your work.
Well, if they were specific about what emotion I was trying to express, that would be too much. But the reading, it's got to be true on some level, Tish. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about this also before.
Absolutely.
As friends,
uh-huh.
that there has to be something that I'm just not acknowledging that's giving way to this.
It's coming through you like a tidal wave that you don't even know about.
Whatever. I'm happy.
Do you feel like you've been a successful painter, and do you measure it by how much you sell?
The affirmative in the first, and certainly not in the second. I've sold a lot. I'm showing a lot. I'm in a lot of organizations in the region, Buffalo and so on. It's a loaded question because it depends on your definition of success. And I think I've been successful in challenging myself and not being afraid to try new things as opposed to doing the same thing over and over again, and not being afraid to get public response. It's hard, as you know, as a writer, putting yourself out there.
Right.
And if it works, and if you get generally positive feedback, then it feels like success. And I do know that I love painting. So that's got to mean something.
The fact that you were able to even give yourself permission to do it is probably part of the success, I would think.
Yeah.
Well, we are almost out of time. Can you give us some contact information? People get in touch with you and look at some of your work?
Sure. My website is barbaramink.com, and I have a page called Mink Art on Facebook. And my email is there, and anyone is certainly welcome to call for a studio visit.
Right. And then you're a member of the State of the Art Gallery.
Member of the State of the Art Gallery.
Go to their
Absolutely.
Site.
And Art Trail is coming up in October, the middle two weekends of October, so people can always stop by then.
Great. Well, Barbara Mink, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Tish.
Really appreciate it, and keep up the wonderful work. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega, and we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.